Welcome to the Women of YouTube podcast. This podcast is hosted by me, Desiree Martins. Every week, I'm going to be showing up in your earbuds to inspire you on your YouTube journey with killer interviews with women YouTube creators, deep dives into the inner workings of how YouTube works, and discussing all the things about YouTube culture and the impact it is having on our world. This podcast is brought to you in partnership with vidIQ, where they help you maximize your video's YouTube reach by studying titles, descriptions, tags, and playlists relevant to your subject matter, while also studying your competitors to help you know exactly what you should be doing for your YouTube growth. So if you're a female creator looking to grow your channel, level up your content, and learn from the best women creators on the platform to get you on your way to YouTube success and future-proofing your income, this is the perfect place for you. Let's do this. Welcome to Women of Video, Kenya. I am so excited to dive into your creator journey because I know it's good. Now it's juicy. It's going to be a fun time.
Yes, it is. It's going to be a lot of fun.
All right. So tell us, Kenya, what do you do on the internet? Like, what does your video path look like?
Yeah, so I'm basically known today as someone who teaches you how to use short form video to build your brand, generate leads and sales. But if the average person would say, oh, she teaches TikTok. So I go, yes, I teach TikTok.
So what got you into the creator space? Like, what led you to content creation and then ultimately video creation?
Yeah. So I've been an entrepreneur for a long time. Like there's a photo behind me that shows me on stage in front of like 12,000 people. So I've been an entrepreneur since I was like in college, but I think that the journey, what happened was in 2016, when Periscope came out through Twitter, I saw a friend of mine make six figures by selling her services on Periscope. And I was like, wait a minute, like what is going on here? So at the time I was working for Sprint on the corporate side. And so I decided, well, I'm just going to get on here and see what could happen with it. And the more I started creating content, the more people wanted things from me that I wasn't offering anything. And so I realized that there was an opportunity for consulting to teach what I have always known through my jobs that I could teach it and I can actually get paid for it. So that kind of started it.
I love this. Okay. So what was the beginning of your video creation journey like? Like what was it like? What were you doing? What were you struggling through? Walk us through that.
For sure. So I think I'm like everybody else. When you first think about doing something that's like live stream, you're like, oh my God, like what if this happens? And what if this happens? And I had all the like struggles of that. Like my biggest struggle was that I had just gone through a divorce and I was so afraid that my ex-husband was going to show up on a live stream or the women in his life were going to show up on my live stream. I was afraid they were all going to say something. And I remember just having this moment of being like, that could happen or not happen, you know, and I have big goals and dreams in general. Let me just do this and see what happens. But also when it came to just video in general, I didn't know what I was doing. I'm like looking at this app, like what is happening? What am I supposed to say? What am I supposed to do? And like, what do I sell something? What am I selling? That was the bigger part when I first started.
Okay. So how did you figure it out and what do you ultimately sell now?
Yeah. So how I really figured it out was just trial by fire. That's the best way to describe it. So I was just like trying and I was watching things. I was watching what other people were doing. I'm somebody who I crowdsource ideas or thoughts. And so I was posting on Facebook, just asking people what they were doing and all that type of stuff. And I just started doing what I call the Kenya Kelly Morning Show, which I would be live every day at like from 8:30 to 9. And I was just teaching. At the time I was teaching people how to build personal brands online, which is what launched my agency, which we were doing like brand design and brand consulting and all that. But fast forward now, everything that I've learned through trial by fire, I now teach it. How to be confident on camera, how to actually shoot a great video, how to have a great hook, and ultimately how to sell your products on video.
Okay, so what, without giving away on all your wonderful trade secrets, like what do you think it takes to be confident on video circa 2024?
So first things first, before, and I'm a therapy type person. I love therapy. The first thing is that before a person can actually put themselves on video, they've got to take a look at what are the thoughts that they think about themselves. What do they believe about other people if they went on video and put themselves out there? Because a lot of people, the reason why they're not creating video isn't because they don't know how to take a video. Everybody knows how to take a selfie, which means we all know how to record a video. But the challenge most people have is, oh my God, I gotta lose weight first. Oh my God, my nose. Oh my God, my skin. Oh my God, I'm so fat. Oh, my voice. You know, there are all these different things. And so I feel like that people, women have to go, I am amazing. And the same way that I look in this mirror that I'm looking at in the every day is the same person I can show up as online. So that's the first thing, is a person has got to do some talking to themselves to encourage them to even get started. But the second
I want to dig into that a little bit.
Yeah.
Especially we as women, like as women of video, that can be really difficult.
Yeah.
How do we get to looking at ourselves and be like, I don't know if I can do something, to, I got this, I'm a bad bee, let's make things happen?
Yeah. So I feel like there's stages to it all. There are some women who go, I don't like this, this, and this about myself, but I'm going to do this anyway, right? I'm that kind of woman. So I've gained weight. My teeth were parting the Red Sea for a while. I mean, all this stuff was happening and I gained a bunch, all this stuff had happened. And I just kind of was like, oh, that's true. But guess what? I can't let that stop me. So I'm that kind of woman. But not everybody's like that, because I've had a lot of training for like 20 years about confidence and stuff. But when I look at the typical woman who may not have had that kind of background, I feel like one of the things that the woman has to ask her is, what is the worst that could happen? And then what is the best that could happen? Because if we can't see them both, then we're only looking at the worst, right? And that was one of the things that I had to ask myself. What if my ex-husband does show up? What's the worst that could happen? But what's the best that could show up if he does show up? You know, what could happen if I just got online and just tried to figure this thing out? It reminded me of when I first got onto TikTok. Nobody was talking about TikTok at the beginning of 2020. I only got on because I'm somebody who prays, and I heard Jesus tell me get on TikTok, which was the dumbest thing, but I did it. And I was there like, nobody is ever going to buy from me. They feel like I'm old. Everybody's making fun of me on Facebook. And I was having all those negative thoughts. And that's what happens to most people. But what we have to do first is we have to go, yeah, all that could be true and could happen, but this too. And we all know the people we look up to today, it wasn't because the cards were all laid out for them and then they just excelled. It was because they had so many things stacked against them. They had their own negative negative thoughts. They had all this other stuff, but they chose to try anyway. People only love Kobe because Kobe was the game time shooter, but there were so many shots Kobe did not make, you know, but we don't really think about the shots that he didn't make, or Curry or whomever, or Oprah didn't make. We just think about what they did today. So we have to have those conversations with ourselves.
I think that that is really important to remember. And I know that for me, like, I'm sitting in that place too. I'm making a big pivot professionally. Mm-hmm. And I'm very much, for the first time, like, I'm 38, I'm heading into my 39th year. Okay. I've always been incredibly confident with like what I'm doing, what I know, how I am. And the thing I'm pivoting into, which is becoming a creator economy strategist, I know this stuff. It's where I live every day. It's where I spend my time. It's who I network with. It's where I talk. It's where I read. It's where I research, where I do mm-hmm. my stuff. But this pivot into this creator economy strategist has been out so much of my imposter syndrome. Because I'm like, girl, who do you think you are? Like, what do you think you know? And I'm like, but you do know this stuff. Like, you talk to people, you have people that tell you, thank you for doing this thing for me and helping mm-hmm. me figure this out and guiding them through it. And like what I've done here with Women of Video for the last 4 years has been like the groundwork for a lot of this kind of stuff.
Yep.
But you have to, I think, move forward that sometimes, even though it's scary or hard, or even your own negative talk, you still got to move forward. Yeah. Like the step one is better than nothing. Step one and talking and failing is better than not knowing and ruminating and all this stuff. I also find what helps, and this is just to piggyback off of like your genius, is having like someone that can like pep you up that can help guide you, lift you up, like a girlfriend or a cousin or, you know, someone that knows you roughly, not like your mama or your husband or your partner. Sure. But people that can like give you real talk and like make sure that like you have that positive self outlet to help you if you're really, really struggling with it.
Yeah, no, it is definitely very beneficial when you have a coach or whether you're paying somebody or it's just somebody who is on the journey with you and they are coaching you and telling you you're amazing. Because I'm confident, but I have my days too. And when I have those moments, I got to go back to my best friend and be like, I don't really know if I can do this. She goes right into mode of like, girl, she starts labeling out all of what I've done, right? So it's kind of like, well, I'm about to start coaching you. But when you were talking about how you're feeling about imposter, it's like what you get an opportunity to do is to go, okay, this may be true. Well, look at all this stuff that I've done, right? Look at all this stuff that I've done. And then all of them are coming for me. Like when I have these moments about being an influencer and I'm like, am I really a B2B influencer? And I'm like, Kenya, TikTok paid you almost six figures to create content for them. You're amazing. And I have to do the talk. So some of us don't have those people that can coach us, but we all can ask somebody. And like, I remember when I was trying to write my book, I was like, oh my God. So I posted on Instagram and on Facebook and was like, all right, y'all, I'm trying to write this book. I need some encouragement. Message me every couple hours. Man, my DM was blowing up. But in 3 weeks, the book was done. Why? People were coaching me because I didn't have anybody close to do that. So I let social media do it.
I did that for my book too. So I said to myself in the Airbnb and I made people write me letters. I was like, write me letters to open at like times. My husband collected them all for me. Remember, and said, open it. And like, he wrote and I'm like, open it this time, open it this time. And it was so helpful.
Yeah. So we all need it.
That's so funny. This one. Okay. Our second thing that we need to do. What is that advice?
The second thing you need to do is you need to start just practicing. You need to let it be awful. So like I have a brand new client who just doesn't do video at all. And I said, okay, here's what I want you to do. I want you to determine, what do you want to talk about? I said, just choose one topic. And then I was like, and then just butcher it. Just record a ton of videos, just terrible, and let yourself be terrible. I said, do not delete them. Just keep trying and then send me a couple of those videos, right? And so what is that doing for her? One, that's giving her accountability, but two, is giving her permission to just be awful, right? Because I was not good when I first got started. I'm just like, if you go on TikTok and you could get to my 2020 videos, you would be shocked at how bad those videos were, you know? But I feel like that a person will not be confident on video, will not do video if they're not giving themselves permission to try. You don't have to post it yet, but it is acting like you're taking a selfie and start recording based upon whatever it is you want to talk about. You know, we've all seen videos where we're like, that's cringe. And we keep saying that's cringe, but here's this creator who's doing cringy content and they're going, because they're just being themselves. And we're like, well, cringe works because it's them being themselves. And so you've got to start somewhere, and that's just filming before you post it.
All of that. I love the humbling that we all need and like to go look at other people's first videos.
Yeah.
Like literally YouTube has like oldest as a setting. Like, go watch that old stuff when we are just lost little puppies trying to figure out what we're doing with our lives.
Yeah.
Because we didn't know. We just knew we had a goal and an idea, and we just needed a place to put it. And like I said, I always laugh. My first video, I'm in Korea. We have no air conditioning. It's so hot. I'm wearing a tank top. You can see my bra. I have in so much dark makeup. And like, you can just watch me start to perspire more and more throughout the video. And then I'm using like a webcam, like I'm talking with my hands, I'm shaking my desk, the audio is terrible. And I'm just like, we're going to do this. And it's like the forcedness of it. And it was just, it was bad. But like, if I didn't make bad videos, I can't make good videos. Like you can't get better at anything. And there's something so specifically unique about where we are. Like something about video, everyone just assumes that they're supposed to be great at it. And I'm like, it's like everyone forgets it. Like whenever you started doing anything for the first time, you were so bad at it.
Yeah.
Because it's how we work. Like that you're going to be bad and you're going to get better. You know, you might not be as bad as some people. You might start out better than others, but Like it's just how it works.
Yeah. I tell people all the time, we didn't go to school for this. We spent our entire lives never knowing how to show up on video, your whole life. And so now you're 25, 35, 40, and you're like, you think you're supposed to know how to shoot video? No, you have never done this before. You should be awful at it.
Yeah, like don't expect yourself to be good.
Look, I'm really sorry to interrupt, but did you know that YouTube is the world's second biggest search engine? Maybe you did, maybe you didn't, but that's why every creator truly needs to be using vidIQ to grow their YouTube channel. vidIQ's tech helps you tailor your video ideas to match what people are searching for right now on YouTube. And once you're ready to upload, well, it starts optimizing and getting you all the details that you need to make sure your videos are getting noticed. If you really want to dive in more and get started for free, please head over to thewomenofyoutube.com/vidIQ to get started on this YouTube channel changing tool that is going to make things so much easier for you. All right, let's get back to it.
On our path and our journeys to, you know, getting over our imposter syndrome, becoming better creators, having camera confidence, mm-hmm. all that thing. There's a crucial need within this. Whether you are creating content talking about your life as like an ADHD mom or like wherever you are in your life, whether you're doing business content, we still need a business within mm-hmm. this. What is the easiest way to get started with turning content creation into a business?
So I think it really depends upon the person. I think it depends upon what it is they're trying to do. Do I think that everybody needs to be a full-time entrepreneur? No. No, I do not. But what I do think that is, if a person is saying, okay, I want to start creating content on video, one of the things you want to do while you're starting is also on the back end, thinking about how do I actually want to make money from this? Uh-huh. Because oftentimes people just start doing stuff and they're not actually saying to themselves, oh, I want to make money. Or they just haven't had a thought process for it. So let's just say you're brand new today and you're like, I want to start doing this and I want to create content. I want to make money. Okay. What are some of the ways you're thinking about making money? Do you want to make a product? Do you want some type of drop shipping thing? Or do you want to get paid working with brands? And let's just say your goal is, I want to get paid working with brands. Okay. Mm-hmm. Before you start creating content, ask yourself the question of, who is this content for? It's not for everybody, but and we call that your niche, your target audience. Who are you creating content for? Like if you're a mom and you're going to have family content, you're teaching how to organize, how to cook or whatever, who is this content for? You may not have it down to a T, the mom or dad or whomever you're going after, but try to have that idea. In addition to having that idea, then you got to go, okay, if I'm creating this content, who potentially is a great brand partnership? Again, if you're a mom, you may say, I don't know, whoever makes like Tupperware. You may say that people that make those cool bibs now for kids where the food falls inside, you know, it may be, what are those things called? The food that gets delivered to you. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, food service, like HelloFresh or.
Yes, exactly. Like yeah. It may be some of those people, right? Or you're a mom who actually builds houses. You build and do all this stuff and you got all these big name companies in mind. So you want to have like your little list of who you're trying to target, because you don't have to have a lot of followers to start working with brands. You just got to get on their radar, right? So I'll give you an example. I recently had surgery and I had used this particular deodorant because it said you can wear it for three days and not smell bad. Well, I didn't shower for 5 days because I couldn't, but I didn't smell bad at all for 5 days. And I had this deodorant. So I was like, okay, that I am pitching that brand right now. Of like, I'll create some content about how this deodorant helped me with this, this, and this. Here's my two styles of content that I'll do. I guarantee you that brand's going to say, we'll take it. But if you are the mom that we're talking about, you can kind of think through, okay, I would love to be able to work with this brand, and this brand. So that way, when you start creating content, you have your audience in mind and your brand in mind, which is going to make you a monetized content creator faster than anybody else because you thought about it.
Mm-hmm. I love that idea too of like having something from like your life be something that you can get sponsored and create content for them.
I'm just saying, it's real. It's the truth.
I said, there are just so many ways to make money and things that we don't think about that I think I think it would blow a lot of
affiliate marketing.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, well, like I know for me, it's like I'm trying, like my son turns 10 this year. My son is a massive, massive Pokemon fan. And one of the things that we want to try and do as a family, and I know this is super first world problems, pretentious, please do not come at me. We want to take him to Japan to go on his like 10-year-old Pokemon journey, like go do fun Pokemon activities in Japan and stuff. And me and my husband are like, we went and we lived in Korea and we had a great time and we want to go back again and enjoy that time there. And I'm like, how can I get the sponsor? Like, what can I do? Like, there has to be someone out there that's interested in like an actual 10-year-old kid going to Japan for his birthday and going on like a faux Pokemon journey. Like, who's going to do this? And so it's finding that sponsor and finding that person that's willing to like take your story, your journey, your experience and give you money to go fulfill it.
Exactly. Yep. Because what the brands are looking for is they are looking for how can we reach more of our target audience by paying you. And so if you're creating the audience and you've got there, it's easy for them to say yes, because they know they're able to make 3 times the amount of money or more from, you know, sponsor content from you.
Yeah, I think that, and like creating for them, and like, they're not going to be able to understand your journey, your uniqueness or any of that kind of stuff. And like in your unique perspective or what you have to offer. So it's definitely, I think, worth doing. So
for sure. I agree.
Awesome. All right. So I would love to hear a struggle that you encountered along your creator journey that just looks very impactful for you that we can learn from.
So I would say I actually have 2 major ones. Well, one was small, but one was made really big. The smallest one is, I've been teaching TikTok marketing for the last almost 4 years. And at the end of, what year is this? 23. At the end of 20, well, when President Trump was in office, he had talked about banning TikTok and then it kind of went away. And then when President Biden got into office, they started talking about TikTok getting banned again. And then it became a much bigger deal. And so for 6 months, our customers didn't buy a thing about TikTok, nothing. And we were like, 6 months is a long time to not generate revenue from your typical product. And so right around month 4, we had to change our entire business because we had lost so much money. And we, you know, I was hit with the hard thing of like, how do I stop the bleeding? And like, do I let go everybody on my team or what do I do? Because, you know, you're watching all this money go out. And so what I decided to do was, first off, I looked at every single thing that I was spending money on. And I was like, okay, here's all these things that I pay monthly, yearly for or monthly for. And I just kind of minimized all that. A lot of the softwares that we weren't really using, we got rid of them. That was the first thing. Then I looked at the people that we were actually paying that, you know, were doing work for us. And I said, here's the work that they're doing. Is that generating us any revenue? If it wasn't, we had a conversation with them and said, hey, for a short time, we're not going to be able to continue on with this because, you know, it's not making us any money. Then I was able to have a conversation with my team, who are all in like the Philippines and Brazil and things of that nature. And I hit them with the, so we could let you go for a period until we get things back going, or there's the option of like lowering your hourly rate. I want you to think about it and then you come back to us. But our intention is to get this thing back going. Every single person on my team came back to me, said, we will take the lower rate, but we will work overtime to change the entire business. And in a matter of 30 days, what would normally have taken us like 9 months, we did it in 30 days. And there were these moments when I would log on to Slack and I'm like, what are they doing? It's 8 o'clock at night and they were all still working. And that was a huge moment for us early this year. And that was quite challenging, but it brought our company closer together. And now everybody's back to their regular salaries. And then the other thing, the hardest thing I've ever had to deal with was going through divorce. You know, I had got married in 2013, beginning of 2014, I found out he was being unfaithful, crazy. And so I ended up like, here's my business, here's my life, all just blowing up. And I had to make the hard decision of, I'm putting this business down for now because my life is in shambles and I can't focus on building a business. I got to just get a job. And so I went and got a 6-figure job and I was like, now we're going to go through on a healing journey. And ever since then, it's been a journey when you go through divorce for sure. But I allowed myself to just go through the healing process while building, and life is different now.
Do you still have your job?
No, I got divorced 10 years ago.
Oh, okay. Sorry. I thought it was something that you had had before. Never mind. Scratch the question.
That's okay. That's a good question.
So what was one of the coolest moments? So like the greatest, most fondest memory you have of being a creator?
I would say one cool moment was Bumble reaching out to me. They had heard my divorce story and they paid me and flew me to Austin, Texas to talk about dating after divorce. But the coolest thing, I'm also a minister. The coolest thing was I was on set with three women on set. And then there was someone who was interviewing us and there's a whole room of people that are filming. And during the time they were asking these different questions. And one of the questions they asked was, do you want to get married again or whatever? Do you still believe in the one, something happily ever after, something like that? I can't remember. And the two women on set with me were like, no, I don't really believe in happily ever after, you know, like, I don't even know if I'll get married again. And the person that was interviewing us, you know, said the exact same thing. And I was sitting there like, I don't believe that. And so I was just like, asked if I could speak up about it. And I was just sharing. I was like, you know, my ex-husband isn't a monkey, but one monkey don't stop no show. Just because that happened with him doesn't mean that I can't meet someone who, or we can meet someone that is amazing and loves us and is faithful and all this stuff. And then like, I just start like using the therapy techniques that I've done, you know, with my own therapy. And then when they took a break, the makeup artist comes up to me and she's crying. And I am like, what's wrong? She goes, you just changed everything. I'm going through a divorce right now. And then the videographer came up to me and was just like, you basically everything that I had just said was just spoke so much to those people that were not quote unquote a part of it. And that was like one of the coolest things to just watch who I am be, you know, online show up in this way where I got paid and I also helped people going through something that was the hardest thing in my life. But it's helping them go through that process. So that was really cool. And then of course, being on Drew Barrymore, that was cool. That was cool too.
I love that. Like the definitely like big, massive goals. Like I know my part for that as well. All right. So I would love to know what you think is going to happen with vertical video and video content as we head into the new year. Now I know that this comes with a gigantic asterisk and caveat, obviously, because every platform is different and every kind of creator is different. Like how education creator will have success be different than how like a lifestyle creator will have success. Like if you are like a mom versus like one of the like 20-year-old bros, the journey is different.
Yeah.
And love from your perspective, like as a generalization, like what do you think we can expect heading into the new year when we look at what the state of like video is, vertical video is, and like what's happening?
Yeah. So what I think is already starting to happen is that, you know, for the longest time, like people who are just joining the vertical video family feel like, oh, I got to shoot these really short videos. But what has started to happen with all the platforms is that they now want people to create a lot longer video content vertically because it keeps people on the platform longer. So TikTok had already started the process of like, now you can shoot up to 10 minutes, but you can upload up to 20 minutes on TikTok. Wow. And so, yeah, so they have, and then they put a lot of energy into live stream on TikTok because that's longer, people on the platform longer. So with TikTok already doing that, YouTube, they're still, you only can do like 60 seconds on vertical. I think that's going to expand a lot. And then Instagram right now is only 90 seconds. That's going to expand too, because the platforms need people on the platform longer. So I think that they're going to become more YouTube style, vertical, for sure on those platforms. I think that companies are probably trying to figure out even the more better ways to pay creators, because they tried to pay everybody in 2022 and 23, but all the programs were kind of interesting and they couldn't figure out how to make it work for them. But I think that they are going to revamp, they're already probably working on their creator paid programs, because if people aren't creating content on the platform, the platforms aren't doing well. So that's happening.
I just wish, I don't understand why they don't just do what YouTube does. Like, why don't they just want to do a rev share model? Like, it makes no sense to me. Like, it's already proven to work. And you have millions of creators that are like, well, I'm going to go over to YouTube because they pay me. Like, why are they not doing that? Like Google and YouTube are publicly traded as well. So like, I'm not understanding it.
I think that they just didn't have their business model set up that way. So it's kind of like, you know, when you look at the finances of it, they have to, certain things got to be built for it. Like, how do I say this? So like, if they make X amount of dollars through ads, and then here's their expenses and all that, and then they've got that cover, and now here's this new thing, they've got to figure out how do we reestablish the platform from a business financial standpoint to where it's actually making sense. Cause I think what I had heard was that they were paying out so much money, but it wasn't giving them the return that they needed for what was actually happening. And so I think that they just have to revamp what they're doing. It's kind of like with YouTube. You're not making money on YouTube until you got 1,000 subscribers, 4,000 watch. There's like these processes of like what they built with that. But none of the platforms were built that way. So they've got to, I think it's harder work internally for them than we know. That's what I think.
Yeah. I just need them to figure it out so that we can divide and conquer where we need to be. Walk me through what a video strategy that you think works best for people. I know that there's a lot of conversations and creator experts that are like, create for the platform specifically, focus on one, then master the next. People all like going back to YouTube as like our hub and our home, as like our foundational piece, and we create in other ways that support it. What are you teaching people these days to be effective in these vertical spaces and with video in general and social in general?
For sure. So one of the things that I'm telling people is that one, you definitely have to start with one, period. And that's like whether it's vertical, long form, whatever. You got to start with the one because you got to learn the platform. You got to learn how to create actual videos that people are going to watch, right? You've got to do that. Now, in the process of doing that, let's just say you're starting out on Instagram Reels. Great. Then what you also can do periodically, if you want to, you can just start putting content on the other platforms. Like for example, most of my content starts out either in my camera roll or on TikTok. And then I just don't have the watermark and I put it up on YouTube Shorts, Facebook Reels, Instagram Reels, and all that. And that's how I kind of started with it. Cause I was like, I'm already doing this here. I haven't mastered the other platforms yet, but I'm just going to get my content out there. And then I said, okay, now let's go to Instagram Reels and let's learn what does Instagram Reels want. Very similar, but I kept learning more about Reels and then just putting content on Facebook Reels and putting content on YouTube Shorts. And then now we are learning, okay, what does Facebook Reels want? Because Facebook Reels paid me $3,000 last month for my content. So I'm like, we're learning that. But each platform does want something a little different, not very different. Ultimately, they want you creating content in their platforms. So the number one thing that I'm teaching my clients right now is shoot everything in your camera roll. Don't shoot it on the platform because if you're shooting on the platform and you are pulling the video down and putting it in other places, there's metadata on the video. So each platform knows this video came from Instagram, it came from TikTok or whatever. And that's not what you want. So you're going to need to create everything in your camera roll and then you can edit them in other platforms. Were you saying something?
Yeah. Okay. So I'm curious about this because one of the tools I like to connect people to is repurpose.io where like I can create something and then it can upload to like Google Drive or whatever, or repurpose other platforms like unwatermarked and all of that kind of stuff. But I've never heard about the metadata thing. Can you explain that a little bit more?
Oh yeah. The software they're very smart. It's kind of like you can say a certain thing on a video and they know what you're saying. Like they just, cause you're saying it. So when you have a video and you shoot it on Instagram Reels, right? Mm-hmm. And then that video automatically saves to your phone, you know, whether it has a watermark or not, it's still, there is data that is on the video that says this came from Instagram. And then the same thing that goes for all the other ones. But if you shoot it in your camera, there's no data on it because it was literally a camera video. And so I didn't think this was true. But once I kept posting all of my videos from TikTok and watching them not do well, I was like, And then when I started taking my Instagram Reels, this one was crazy. I took Instagram Reels and I put it to TikTok without the watermark. It took 2 hours to get to 100 views. I have 500,000 followers. I reshot the video on TikTok, 1,000 views within an hour. I was like, yep, it's true.
That is crazy. Like they really just don't, they really just don't want to play together, do they?
No. And you know, when I think about it, I wouldn't either. If I was Burger King, I don't want McDonald's advertising Big Macs. Get out of here. So they're like, we're not playing. Y'all want to be on our platforms, you got to play here. And I'm like, sucks for us, but I get it as a business.
I my argument though to that would be, then don't copy. You know, like, I mean, like, to clap back at, like, when it's like TikTok be something great, and Instagram and Facebook and YouTube, they just straight up copied it without figuring out a way to make it their own. Yeah. Like, I think that's one of the things, like, with YouTube, like, where it only does the 60-second videos, like, that's how they're holding on tight to that. Yeah. But I think at the same time, though, it's still not, they still haven't figured out, like, how are they a unique, like, how is it uniquely work? And at this point, like, YouTube Shorts is just messing with people's YouTube channels. Like, it's like the amount of people that are leaving existing channels that have grown or stopping creating that kind of content because it's messing up with their long form stuff is astronomical. Like, I think it's really interesting that they're like, don't repurpose, but we're just gonna copy what they're doing.
Yeah.
I know things were getting really good over in our interview, but I wanted to take a minute to remind you that we now have a new home for the Women in Video community. You can head over to Patreon right now, and we have the link in our show notes that you can go find it there, where we're going to be able to have after show information. We're going to have chats. We're going to have information and just come together to answer questions and connect and support each other as creators. This whole creator thing can be really confusing and can be really lonely. So let's come together to support each other like the badass women that we are. Head over to patreon.com/womenofvideo to get started now.
Yeah.
How do we make it unique for platforms? Do you think that there's a point where you just record separately and edit separately and then just upload it?
I think that right now it's still working really well. You recording it separately and then editing it there. For me, that is still it's the most time consuming one, but it's still the best results. Like, I am still getting the best results camera to the platform.
All right. I guess that makes sense. I do that. I've been doing that. Like, so I've been like, I talked to you before, like, I'm rebuilding my studio. So I have like recording videos for the different things. I've been recording it just on my phone.
Yeah.
That way I can go back and just like upload them all natively. Cause I'm like, I don't want to worry about time limits and then like doing it, like I'm doing something. I don't want the posting process to interfere with like the doing process.
Yeah.
So it sounds like that's just what we need to do going forward. Like, just upload everything, have our messaging copy pasted with the adjustments accordingly. And even though it's more time consuming, I think it's still super necessary to do.
And that's where social media managers have the upper hand with what they're doing. Because if a person wants to hire a social media manager, that person now, they can't just take and repurpose the same video. That social media manager has the upper hand to ask for more money because they have to actually be in each platform, edit, and all that type of stuff. So there's a win for a group of people, and it's the social media managers.
I think that is an important point. Like, there's so many things that are stopping it. It's like I was trying to figure out over the break how to turn ads off on Roku. Not because ads bother me, but because I have children. Yeah. And my daughter is very susceptible to things that have princesses and unicorns and pink stuff on it.
Yeah.
And she was watching something that my husband and I were like, hard pass. Like, this, we don't do stupid in this house. And we're like, she's like, well, I saw it on Roku. And I was like, you cannot turn off ads.
Wow.
Like, you cannot do it. I think I saw this hack from like a week ago. You have to go like onto your like the back end of your router and put like code in place. And I was like, this is ridiculous. So I think this is the same idea. This is the same idea. Like, if you want Roku, you have to have ads. If you want to be successful on your social platforms with a repurposing strategy, post it to the places.
Well, they're all, all the streaming platforms are slowly adding the feature to where you can pay an additional $2-3 a month and no ads. So I think that Roku
was just going to be slower. I got an email from Amazon about that. We're going to be charging you. We're going to add ads. If you want an ad-free experience, it's an extra $3 a month. I'm like, I pay $100-something for like Prime every year. Really? You're going to, like, I can't just, but I get it. I get it. Like, it's all the things, but
I got to make the money. So I'm like, you know,
so my question that supports this is going to be like, is the loophole third-party tools? Like, can I use a Hootsuite, a Planoly, a Later, make my video natively, maybe, and like, even on my computer, maybe, and then like put it to scheduling software? What are our thoughts on that?
Yeah. Oh, for sure. I don't think it's a problem at all. I think it's just more so making sure that these videos did not come from the other platforms. I don't think they have a problem with that at all.
Okay. Well, that's good to know, because that might be a little bit of a loophole to help us with like our time concerns and stresses.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. Now, I have a very selfish question to ask, but I think it's an important part of brand building and evolving as an entrepreneur and as a creator. One of the ways that you get business, and one of the ways that you have built credibility within what you're doing, is you speak. Walk us through your speaking journey. Like, how does someone find the right, relevant topic to talk about and then find the events to speak at?
Yeah. So when I look at topics, I literally only speak about the things that I talk about every single day. So I'm talking about vertical video. I'm talking about video in general. I'm talking about TikTok marketing. I'm talking about TikTok and Instagram reels. And so for me, before I think about speaking at anybody's conference, I'm always like, as a company, what am I trying to sell? Because I'm not just selling me as a speaker. I'm trying to ultimately generate leads and sales from those events. I'm not going to pitch on stage, but all those people being connected to me is going to give me opportunity to get more leads and more sales. So I only speak about the things that are going to help our company grow, right? So if people try to get me to come and speak about divorce, no, because I'm like, that's not what I speak about. I just don't do that. But I do speak about what I speak about. So that's the first thing. And then I'm choosing, when I look at my actual topic, I am like, what is the hottest thing that people are wanting to know right now? What is the thing that people are like, oh my God, I don't know what's going on. And then I will lead with that. So then when it comes to getting booked to speak, I talk about this all the time. The first way to get booked to speak is you got to be creating content online, right? And I'm talking about speaking content where people can hear you, they can see you, they can feel you. And you also, when you can, do content that is on live stream, because event producers, people that are looking for speakers, they want to see, how are you live? How are you when it's not scripted and you're just going? They want to see that, because a lot of times we haven't been on stage yet. So we've got to speak somewhere for people to even want to consider us. So that's the first thing. The second thing is I'm looking at who is speaking at a certain event. Like if I'm seeing people like flyers or like, you know, the ads that show you events, I'm looking to see who is speaking at these events. When are they? Are they speaking on my topic? And could their audience benefit from me? And if I can see that, then I go into sales mode. I go into finding the event. I go into contacting their email address that may be on their website. If they have an Instagram account, I go into the DM. And I'm just like, hey, my name is such and such. I teach on this, this, and this. I see you're having this event. I would love to see how we can connect, how we could collaborate. And I pitch like crazy to all the things. If I see that somebody that I know on social is speaking at an event and the event is at least a couple months away, I'll reach out to that person and say, hey, I see you're speaking at such and such event. I am curious, would you be open to making an introduction for me? I don't expect them to do it, but if they do it, then that makes it a lot easier. Then if I'm on somebody's podcast or whatever, and I know that they may have an audience that does events, I will then ask the podcast host. I'll say, hey, so do you know anybody hosting an event that could use a TikTok marketing speaker or a short video speaker? So I'm constantly looking and scouring the social media, the world, to find opportunities. I get rejected 9 times out of 10, but I continue to pitch. And what starts to happen is that when I am on stage at somebody's event, my thing is like, I say it's go time. And so like the moment I get on stage to the moment I get off, everybody that has experienced me said, what just happened? That is how I look at it. I'm like, my job is to crush this on behalf of the event, right? Because that's what they hired me to do. to crush it for the people that were in the room. And I want everybody just talking. That was a great session because my job is to crush it. And then what ends up happening from there, I'll get booked by someone who was in the room, or I'll reach back out to the event host and say, hey, how was that for you guys? Did y'all enjoy that? You know, could I come back next year? And do you have any friends that are hosting events? That gives me events all the time because I do all that.
That is a lot of work. That is a labor of love for something I know you love to do. Yeah,
but it's so really easy. Like, because here's how easy it is. You know, you're on social media, you're scrolling because we're always scrolling. An ad gets served to you, and I'm like, that's an event. Who's doing that? Click, click, read, click, click. Hey, my name is Kia Kelly. Okay, I'm done. Or so it's like, it seems like it's harder because, but it's always coming up on our feed because the events that we could speak at, they're targeting us with their ads. So it's like, I saw it anyway. That's like even working with brands. When I see a brand deal with they're doing with somebody, I'm like, got it. I will then go and try to find where did they go to do that. And then I'm done. Takes like two or three minutes. And then I just move on and I'm pitching.
I love that. And what's really fun is if you really, really want, wherever you are in the world, you can see Kenya and myself on stage together in Birmingham, the United Kingdom in May. Mm-hmm. And the funnest thing, so she's talking about her genius of TikTok and social video. I, your girl, am seeing the event. I'm going to be the one hyping everybody up, getting them ready to go on stage. And what's even better is it's happening on my literal actual birthday.
Really? Yeah, that's so good. Do they know?
I did. I told Matt. That's what it was happening. So it's called Tube Fest. We'll have links to it, of course, over in the comments. I know that they're doing like early ticket sales. They did their early bird at the end of 2023, but it's still in ticket mode. And they have a virtual ticket as well if you are not able to like get to that event, whether like if you're in England, please go. If you're in Scotland, Ireland, like in that area, go. Yeah. It's so worth it. I know that all of y'all over there have a whole thing about like we don't travel far, but travel far for this.
So good. That's true.
So and we'll have a good time and all of the things. So I am so excited, and I will end on that super positive, happy note. Kenya, I am so grateful for your journey and sharing what you have done and how we can tap into all of the things that you do. Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time. As always, you can find everything to connect with Kenya, all of our stuff over in our show notes at womenofvideo.com. And until next week, remember, you are possibly amazing. Bye.
Thank you for listening to the Women of YouTube podcast. We would love to know what you thought about this latest episode. So make sure to tag us with hashtag Women of YouTube with your thoughts.